Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 2, season 16. Thank you for joining us. We've got a bit of a reunion going on. No Ryan Champion this week. He's away being the man from Del Monte. No, I genuinely have no idea where he is this week and what he's doing.
OTL.
He's OTL. but we've got Jack Bengian, you've already heard. Hello, Jack Bengian.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And we've got Trevor Agnew.
Hello, boys. How are we?
We've got a bit of a trio. Yeah, we're all good, Trev. How are you?
I'm good, mate.
We had a couple of weeks off. Obviously, you weren't with us last week, so there was no any other businesses, etc. I trust you've got some quality any other businesses to pair you for this week.
As always.
Mine are never any good, so
we're not going to them just yet, but I've just realised that I didn't prime you to have any of the businesses ready, so I thought right at the beginning, I thought I'd at least give you the time to think about something to talk about. Ironically, I managed not to do any other business last week because we ended up going off on a tangent with Rise, and then we had an excellent piece with Rich as well. So I didn't do one last week, so I need to get my thinking cap on as well. Anyway, boys, we're back, and we're back in WRC. We've got Rally Argentina coming up. The shakedown times have already started to come in. I don't know whether you've managed to see these yet, chaps, but Tanak was fastest in shakedown. Nouvelle was second fastest. Chris Meek was
not
third.
Over yet.
Well, it's not over yet. No, it's auto refreshing every 60 seconds, but that's where we're at the moment. So, without further ado, there's a few bits and pieces I want to talk about Rally Argentina. But Jack Bengian, I'm going to come to you first because Trevor Agnew basically nailed his colours to the mast very, very early on. He actually sent over to our group chat his predictions. The other day, so
that's only because I didn't think I'd be on. That's right.
Yeah, but Trev, it's nice to know that you're always there and you're always thinking that you're still thinking about the program, even if you are not going to be on. But I'm going to read out to our listener. You've gone Tanak, Meek, Nouvelle, and ironically, the three fastest shakedown times is Tanak, Nouvelle, and Meek. Now, Trevor Agnew, you've got good form for this. Jack Bengian, any thoughts on that?
I think it's a good effort. It's some very consistent drivers he's picked there, very quick drivers. So I don't think anyone's in a position to argue with Trevor Agnew based on his predictions. We're all a lot worse than he is. So I'm gonna let Trevor Agnew have that one, and that's not a bad selection, I've got to say.
Are you gonna this early in the podcast nail your colours to the mast? Are you gonna give us any kind of prediction?
Yeah, why not? I think it's going to be a Thierry Neuville victory. I think Oit Tanak is going to be second, and I think Sebastian Ogier is going to be third.
Okay. Should we do my predictions?
Yeah, do it.
Because mine make yours look like you're a genius, to be fair. So I'm going to go
Takamoto Katsuta for the win, followed by Alberto Heller to finish second, and Martin Palacio Wilkinson to finish third.
I'll be honest with you, I was going to go Alberto Heller.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah, see, that was the toss-up. No, I am going to go... I'm going to put Elvin on the podium again. Now, I'm going to put Elvin third. Second, I'm going to go Nouvelle. And first, I'm going to go Oit Tanak.
I thought you were going to go Hayden Padden for a minute there.
Funny you should say
that. That's not outrageous. That's actually quite tame for you.
Trev, I'll be honest with you. I've listened back to a couple of my predictions and how wayward they were. And the only way I can describe it, in if I can use football terms, dare I say, in the moment, it's like somebody square right in front of the goal and manages to hit the corner flag. I think that's the best analogy I think I can come up with football-wise for my predictions in WRC. But that's where I'm going to go. I'll tell you what, right. First thing I want to come to, obviously, we've also got Andreas Mikkelsen back for this particular event. And I was surprised. I genuinely forgot, Jack Bengian, that the man that he's replacing, obviously, that replaced him, obviously, on Corsica, Sebastian Ogier, genuinely your hero, had won this event 8 times
in a row. Yeah.
In a row, and yeah, he's been dropped.
It's a it's a mystery lineup, isn't it? We've seen some very interesting things at Honda. You could make the same argument for Hayden Paddon having had that sort of last stage victory against, well, it wasn't really a last stage victory, he maintained the lead but held off Sebastian Ogier to win in 2016, and he's not here either. So yeah, and it's interesting lineups from all the WRC teams on this one.
Trev, I can only assume that Sebastian Ogier chose not to do this one, because if you've got somebody who's won this event 8 times... Sebastian Loeb in your ranks, who's won it 8 times. Thanks, Jack. Yeah, it's all right. You can tell you're doing more of that autosport video stuff now, because people jump on stuff very quickly.
I've seen the Facebook comments. And the YouTube ones. Yeah. The YouTube ones quite often take the mick out of the length of my trousers, which no one can do on this podcast because no one can see my trousers. So it's brilliant. That's why I love this podcast so much.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. But anyway, back on topic. Trev, if you had Seb Loeb in your ranks, would you not be trying to convince him to perhaps do this one and maybe move things, maybe see whether he'd move Danny round or whatever? Yeah. Am I just missing something here?
I would give up if I couldn't get Loeb to do Argentina because of his record. That was actually any other business. It's just tipping the cap to him. Because of the nature of the rally, it's absolutely flat out. And to win that 8 years in a row, and fair enough, back then there wasn't as much competition as there is now, but either way, you still have to complete the rally in difficult conditions. And he would definitely be top on the list. He'd be the first name on the card, really, behind Neuville. Well, second name, then.
Jack, we obviously we've been flippant and we've talked extensively about Hyundai's lineup. I can understand perhaps Andreas coming back for this one, because I think he's got good form in the past on this, good stage wins and things like that. Whereas you could almost, now Danny's been really consistent, but I think Danny's kind of resigned himself to this part team player. You kind of thought that a conversation might have happened where they might have went to Danny and went, do you fancy leaving this one and putting our, you know, a man that's won it 8 times in to help us with our manufacturer quest?
Possibly. Do you want to hear my prediction as to how this has happened?
Go on.
I think Hyundai is simultaneously keeping Sebastian Loeb happy by not forcing him to go all the way to Argentina to do a rally, which probably isn't very high on his agenda of things to do at the minute, and also throwing Andreas Mikkelsen a bone because they've dropped him previously, having last year said that he had a contract for the season and that he was going to do all the rallies, and then suddenly he's been dropped. I think it's them throwing him a bone, making sure he's in the lineup, giving him, a return, if you like, to the lineup. And, you know, I don't think Sebastian Loeb will be, although he has won this event 8 times, I don't think it'll be one of the rallies he sort of looks at the calendar and thinks, I absolutely must have to go all the way to Argentina to do this rally this year. I think he's probably thinking, I don't need to do this one, and I'm quite happy to sit this one out. That's my prediction, because otherwise, as you've both already said, why on earth would you not have him in the lineup if you're Hyundai?
He's picking the rallies that he wants to do, of course, and we saw that last year. The other thing is, who's leading the drivers and the manufacturers' championships? What do we know?
I suppose. But I'll be honest with you, Trev. I thought Jack sounded very succinct there. There's not more to be said, really, is there?
You sound equally as surprised as well, which is also probably a good reaction to me being succinct.
No. This autosport stuff, these videos you're doing, obviously is paying off.
well, if you're benefiting and the Absolute Rally listeners are benefiting, then everyone's a winner, aren't they?
Everyone's short as your trousers, then. Is that what we're saying?
we like your ankles.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I just think it's quite, you know, it shows that you're going through growth spurts. Still at this age.
Can't grow anymore.
The fact that when you leave the house, that something happens where obviously your trousers fit, and by the time you get to work, they don't.
Hey, listen, I draw the line at taking fashion tips from you, Tony.
That's a fair point, well made. Anyway, right. So we've done predictions for Rally Argentina. I suppose we can't move on from Rally Argentina without mentioning Elvin, what happened to him, obviously, on Corsica, and what happened to him on this event. Of course, last year, losing the event by 0.7 of a second, Jack Bengen. Elvin, and I think David Evans makes some reference to it in MN this week. There's a new Elvin about. I was concerned about how Corsica would affect him. What's your take on it?
I think it's very interesting, his comments in Motorsport News, actually. If you've not read it, then do pick it up, or you can read it on Autosport's website as well. Sorry for the shameless plug. But it is worth it, because David Evans works very hard to bring you these updates and these stories, and I think it deserves a bit of credit. He talks about how the setup wasn't right last year and how that wasn't a problem for Sebastien Ogier in a, what I can only describe as Elvin sort of doffing his cap to how good Sebastien Ogier is, because he basically says that Sebastien Ogier drove through the bad setup last year and was still fantastic anyway, whereas he struggled a little bit more. That's how I read into it anyway. But, you know, Elvin's going to have a very big event this time. You know, for 2017, he was 0.7 seconds off the victory, but that was with the EMAC car. He's moved back into the factory lineup and was miles off last year. So it's a massive event for him to show how far he's come. He also sort of links back to last year and back to 2017 and says that perhaps last year he was trying a little bit too hard, having been 0.7 seconds off the win in 2017, that therefore had pushed him to try a bit too hard in 2018. So it's going to be really interesting to see where Alvin's at, and you know, I'm really excited actually to see where he does end up, because if he has a bad event here, then it's, you know, it's not going to be so good for him. But he's had a great start to the season, and there's no reason why he can't replicate that form from 2017 and sort of prove a few of the doubters wrong, if you like.
No, absolutely, Trev. You know, obviously we talk to you about this stuff all the time. You know, I was fearful for him last season, you know, losing an event by 0.7 seconds. I can't even put that into context. How anybody would feel losing an event like that. And, there was a lot said about his form last year. I think David Evans even said today, this week in his column with regards to, you know, he raised an eyebrow perhaps that Elvin got another opportunity at M Sport. But we have got a new Elvin, haven't we?
Yeah, indeed. And just for everybody right saying, it was 2017, not last year, where he got beat by 0.7 of a second. His second term, he struggled last year at pace against Ogier.
Sorry, yes, it was.
Yeah, it's fine. He's definitely changed this year. Scott and him seem to have a good partnership going on. And his pace is there. I just didn't include him this time. You know, now that the weather's changed, it's probably a good shout for the Fords, because they are quite reliable, aren't they, compared to the others? The others can be fickle. And with the weather, the second pass over the stage is going to be quite rough. They had a lot of rain. And we saw, must have been 3 years ago, it was, I think, when Meek won it. That was really rough in places. And so that could play into his hands a little bit. But just some outright pace, I think, it was Tannock and the three that I picked. But definitely Elvin and even Sunnan, I think, could be up there. You know, certainly on the first day, in the morning, they'll be up there on times as well.
It's a place that you've been to, Trev. How do the stages stand? Because they're a very sandy type of quality, aren't they? It's not conventional gravel. They kind of have a sandy quality with some gravel in, of course. But how do the stages stand up, you know, when you are, you know, road position and things like that?
On the second pass, as I said, it can be very rough. And you mentioned it earlier, Mickelson prefers that surface. He seems to think that it suits his driving style. Whether it does or where it doesn't, if psychologically he thinks that, then he should be going fast this weekend, because he certainly has to turn the corner. And it's just the pace of the rally. That's why Tannock absolutely blitzed everybody last year, 10 fastest times. And that was the big sea change for me when Tannock started to really pull ahead of the field. And, you know, his performance surge, it got everybody's attention straight away. So he's going to be really quick. And I think Meek, because of the nature of the roads as well, be fast in that car. And Neuville, you can't really rule out, but it's just, it comes down to the second pass of the stage as to which car is going to perform. You know, if it is a little bit rough, it might just have been some freak showers. There's certainly plenty of rain. And if it's not as wet on the rally, you know, if it hasn't got through the surface too much, then it might be okay.
Just to add to that very quickly before we move on as well, we've had a lot of heavy rain in the region as well, and it is starting to dry out now, but you know, depending on how wet the stages are as well, could have a massive effect on how the second pass comes, and even to a certain extent how the first pass comes with Thierry, because he's going to be first on the road. You know, if it's wet, it's really going to mix things up, so it's going to be interesting to see how that weather develops.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because Rich, of course, who was on with us last week, he was putting some images up of what's going on in the service park. Obviously, there's quite a lot of standing water. But while I was looking at those, somebody put a picture up of Mads Osberg wrecking in a Toyota Hilux. And I thought, well, that tells a tale within itself, doesn't it? Potentially how rough the stages could be if you're wrecking in a Hilux. But I'm assuming that must be a higher one. That's the only thing I can put down to that. That's the only thing they could get out on higher.
Well, high cars use of recce cars. That'll never happen, will it?
Allegedly, obviously. Allegedly. Of course, none of us have ever done that. Apart from
fastest
me.
Fastest car in the world.
I was going to say, I'll briefly start. I remember doing the Manx. I'm rolling a car on the Manx. This is a few years ago, and that's 10 or 12 years ago. Rolling a car on the Manx, having a higher car, which was a KA, and it went back with some stone chips on the bonnet. And the bill for the stone chips on the bonnet was greater than the car that I rolled. They've got you by the short and curlies. That's all I'm saying to you people. Be careful if you're using them as recce cars. Anyway, Jack, we've been talking about Elvin, of course, his form there. One man that's not too far behind him in the points, of course, is Chris Meek, who's, I suppose, had a steady start, I think it's fair to say, to his Toyota career. But there's a nice piece again in MN this week with regard to his thoughts on having, you know, it's Tommy Mäkinen in there and the input that having Tommy Mäkinen in the team and things like that. And he feels that he can perhaps take on the mantle that Oitanak took last year, where he was on similar type of points at this point last year. And of course, we all know how that panned out for him.
Yeah, exactly. Put simply, Chris Meek's in exactly the same position that Oitanak was last year. And if you look at how the year progressed last year for Oitanak, then, you know, if Chris Meek can replicate that, then he'll be a pretty happy man. It would mean not winning the World Rally Championship, so he probably won't be very happy with that. But the pace was good through the second half of the season for Oitanak. And Toyota seemed to be to take a pragmatic approach to upgrading the car each round and doing little bits and bobs and tidying things up and working on areas where they're struggling reliability-wise. And they seem to have worked very hard since some of the issues they had at the end of last year, in the middle of the season last year. So, you know, Chris has got a great package underneath him. The only question that remains to be seen is, you know, on his day, can he beat Oitanak in a straight fight? And the answer to that will come later in the year when they're both sort of on the same level. Because I think Chris Meek's needed a bit of time to settle into that team, to get back up to speed after, you know, if you look at the period of last year that Chris Meek was sat out, that was the period that Oitanak really came into his own and was dominating, and Chris Meek was sat on the sidelines. So he's probably needed these few rallies to settle back in and get up to that pace, but now he's really got to kick on, and this is the perfect opportunity for him now, as he's pointed out that, you know, he's in the same position that Oit was last year, and this is the chance for him to push on and prove that he can be as quick as Oit for the rest of the season.
Well, there you go. Folks, we're not going to do any more on Rally Argentina, because as you're listening to this, probably you'll be tuning into WRC Live and things like that. Or you may well be listening to this retrospectively, where you can laugh at our predictions and laugh at the fact that Ryan Champion didn't have the kahunas to give us his predictions in advance.
Ooh.
I know. Sorry, I'm calling him out on it. I know. Big call. I want to move on to a couple of other things. I've got a great Any Other Business, which I mentioned a little bit later on the podcast, which I'm going to talk to you guys about in a second. But it's also, there's a couple of events going on. It's the Olympus Rally over in the States. We're going to try and get somebody on, probably from Subaru USA, whether it's going to be a Solberg or whether it's going to be a Higgins. We're not too sure, but we're going to try and get somebody on over the next couple of weeks, because I think the dynamic in that team must be quite interesting, Trev, because obviously young Solberg is, you know, David's old enough to be his old man, dare I say.
it's excellent. I saw they were at Dirtfish Rally School. They're doing some promotional work, and there's a photo of Petter and Oliver on the car. Just the colours, the whole raw emotion that goes with those colours. And it must be amazing for Petter to have Oliver in the car. So, he's got a lot to learn in those rallies, definitely.
It's interesting, Jack. You guys went with us last week. Trevor Agnew, before we go any further, right, folks, right, just to show that we do this as live, the fact that Trevor Agnew's told the tale, and I've just had a text message from Ryan Champion to give us his predictions for Rally Argentina, which we'll come to when we do Any Other Business. I can't believe you grasped me up, Trevor Agnew.
I just
can't believe that. That's poor form. I think we all know where Trev's loyalty lies now in this whole dynamic of the four of us. Anyway, you guys went with us last week, and Ryan and I did talk about the announcement, obviously, Petter taking a step back, perhaps from full-time competition, semi-retirement, dare I say. And obviously, the story came out, Jack, with him moving into management, seeing what Tommy Mäkinen has done and maybe taking some inspiration from that. Do you see a future, perhaps, for Petter? Do you think that's also part of the role? Obviously, he makes, obviously, comments with regards to the fact that, you know, Oliver did very much his own deals and things like that, but he seems to be quite hands-on, and obviously the family is supporting him in this little quest over in the American Rally Association.
I think, put simply, Petter can do pretty much anything he wants. He's a charismatic guy. His love for the sport comes across in everything that he does. We saw him make that difficult transition from rally into rallycross by no mean feat at all. You might think just because it's got rally in the title, it means a rally driver can move over to rallycross and do well, but that's really not the case, especially now how the rallycross cars are driven a lot more like circuit racing cars as opposed to a rally car. So a very difficult transition that he made there, and as a team boss, and with Pernilla overseeing a lot of that as well, and becoming the team boss and all that sort of stuff. So for me, he's picked up a lot of the skills that he'll need to be a team boss over the past few years in what he's been doing. But he's just got that personality that people, drivers will want to come and drive for him. Tommy's a bit more sort of no nonsense, a typical Scandinavian in his demeanour, but equally as inspiring to drivers around. And Petter's more sort of outgoing, the cheeky chappy kind of vibe to him. But it drivers will want to drive for him in equal measure, I think. And if there's an opportunity to drive for a world rally champion, it's always a big deal for the drivers who are coming up. So if Petter wants to pursue that route, there's no doubt in my mind that he'll make that work and that he'll be at the helm of a very big manufacturer at some point in the future.
Trev, what did you make of the announcement?
I think it's quite interesting. I also had a great conversation on Monday. I was at Linden Hill for the British Rallycross, and there's a guy there, I'll not name, but he's quite close to Petter. And it was interesting, we're having a chat about Petter wanting to do a Tommy, because we think that's where he's heading. He wants to own his own team and maybe working with a manufacturer. Subaru's really interesting as well. So Subaru still sit on the FIA panel, the manufacturer's panel. And Subaru have indicated in the past, having if it's hybrid or some sort of electrification, they'll consider coming back in again. So there you go. Let's throw all of that in the hat and Petter will run a Subaru team in the World Championship.
And that's why, obviously, he's got this thing going, obviously, with his son over in America, maybe. Who knows?
Speculating wildly, but it's a good story, isn't it?
You've just invented that one, so we'll run with that one. We'll run with that one, but a great story. Anyway, listen, before we move on to, there's a couple of things. Obviously, it's the next round of the British Rally Championship this weekend also. We're going to do Ryan Champion's predictions because Trevor Agnew decided to text him and grass me up. Ryan Champion's gone Meek Tanak Evans.
How's that grassing you up? I don't get that bit.
Well, I basically gave him a bit of a hard time for not having the kahunas to send them in advance, and then you text him to make sure he sends them in.
Well, I texted in the open group, so you could see it as well, wasn't it? If I'm going behind your back.
Yeah, but I'm kind of busy here engineering stuff and putting stuff in places and doing stuff. So anyway, there you go. So we've got Ryan's prediction. So let's just so it's Meek Tanak Evans. I think he's well off.
We'll see,
won't we? Before we come to the British Rally Championship and what's going on there, some big news with regards to the Close Road Rally in Scotland, Jack Bengen. I know you guys have covered it, I think, in both Autosport and of course in MN, but massive news.
Yeah, big news. Close Roads back in Scotland. They've passed a similar law to the one that's been passed in England and Wales recently. So that means we'll see the return of the Mull Rally, which is going to run in its sort of traditional October date, sort of end towards the end of October, and we'll see the Jim Clark Rally come back this year, which was scheduled to come back in May, but unfortunately has had to move that due to the fact that the law's only just been passed and we're already quite close to May. So they're going to run an event in November to sort of get back into the groove of things. So great, and I'll go into this a little bit more in my any other business, but a brilliant move for motorsport in the UK, and absolutely fantastic to see two massive rallies like the Mull and the Jim Clark back, and you two will both be in a much better position than me to talk about the qualities of those two events. But as a fan, they're always one that you look out for on the calendar straight away. What date are they in, and can I get up there, can I make some arrangements and jump in with some friends and go and watch. So great to see those two events back on the calendar. Really, really excited to see them back.
Trev, it's an event which you and I have both done, obviously not together, maybe one day in the future, who knows, but you and I have both done. I love the event, and I always love the event, but I also miss the fact that I didn't do it probably during the era that you did, where, we always talk about unique characteristics of rallies. Jim Clark, of course, was run through the night originally,
yeah.
Which was phenomenal.
Only a few stages, like, but yeah, and you've got the one over the mountain of Canada. Is it Alison Baffins? Is that the name of it?
Yeah, Alison Baffins, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that in the night in the Astra, and we spun in sixth gear down between two banks, and it was one of those that could have went anywhere, and more or less got wedged. But yeah, the night stages were brilliant. The other thing up there was really tricky, and it rained. I hope you remember the shiny tar, and on some of the stages in particular are quite treacherous. But a fantastic rally, really brilliant, well organised. In the backyard of Andrew Cowan, of course. So we used to rally around his farm at one point. And Andrew Cowan being the boss of Mitsubishi for many years and a very good driver in his own right. So first off, hats off to all those people who worked tirelessly to get those two rallies back again. I personally haven't been to Mull, and the fact that this has all been announced now probably means that there's no accommodation left for me to get this year. But yeah, I'd love to go to Mull, and I must make an effort of going. I think I'm free for those dates when I looked at it. So maybe I'll get my bum up there and have a look at Mull.
Absolute rally road trip.
Absolute rally road trip. We should, maybe, I just want to say we should get a hire car, but I haven't said what I've just said. Probably, we probably wouldn't get one. Oh, the irony. Oh, the irony. Right, boys, we're coming headlong towards the end of this section. And of course, before we go to any of the businesses, just want to quickly mention the Pirelli rally this weekend, Jack Bengen. Unfortunately, one of the top runners, Martin McCormack, has pulled his entry. So it's, again, we've got quality, but not quantity up there.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, and also I feel very sorry for the competitors who've entered the international section, and the mileage has been cut. Big sympathy to the Pirelli organisers. Got no choice really when the entry's so low. If you've not got the money coming in from the entry fees to shorten the mileage, which is sad. But it's you know, that's not me slanting the organisers. Completely understand that decision. It's just sad from the people who have supported the event. They're the ones who are suffering for the people who haven't. So bit of a sort of a dampener towards the start of what is one of the, you know, usually one of the best British Rally Championship rounds with Killer Kielder, and there's usually one or two sort of international entries that crop up and surprise you, mainly Yari Huttunen this year, which is a completely random surprise to me, having him being dropped at the start of the year by Hyundai and now rocking up in a Hyundai, having driven a Skoda for the first couple of rounds of the year in the Pirelli Rally in Britain, which is completely random, but it'll be good to see where he's at, and yeah. So it's a, like you said, Tony, a good quality entry. Matt Edwards, who won last year. Tom Cave, who was completely dominant when he did the event in 2016, would that have been, or 2017, when he debuted the Hyundai, and then the suspension broke on the third stage. So it would be very interesting to see if that Hyundai is a little bit stronger and if Tom can hold off Matt for a whole event.
Well, the Yari Huttunen deal, I think I can probably shed a little bit of light on. Philip Case, who runs Tom Kay's program, also I know they listen to the podcast, so hello to everybody at Philip Case. They had another car. Obviously, they've worked quite a lot last year with Hyundai, and I know Yari Huttunen did a lot of the test driving of the R5 car as well. So I think it's quite a shrewd move, to be honest with you. If they've found budget some way or another to get the second car out, obviously to get the man who was doing a lot of the test driving of that car originally out in it. I think it's a bit of a shrewd move, to be honest with you, Jack.
Yeah, sounds like a shrewd move, and sounds like you know a lot more about me than this one, so I'll bow to your expert knowledge on this one.
Trev, an event again you and I have both done, and it's the only thing I ever think of when Jack, there's a lot of cliches when we talk about doing the Pirelli rally, and Jack's already used one of them, which is Killer Kielder, that invariably gets used. And in my mind, having done the rally probably for the last, well, I've done it, first time I did it was in 2002, so what's 17 years ago. All I ever think when I think of pace notes is in. All I ever, because despite all the Killer Kielder ditches, there's lots of ins as well, and you can pretty much get a car within.
Yeah, and I think that might be the thing that will catch out Huttunen, because it is something you've got to learn and adapt to as you go to the rally for the first time. You know, you've got a big high rise, a big crown on the road, and then the ditches are the ones that will get you. But it's interesting, the juniors in particular are going to be quite good in that rally as well. So you've got Crichton, you've got James Wilson over from home, and Northern Ireland are going to have a good battle at it. And at the top of the field, as you say, you've got those three cars that will be going out of hammer and tong. You've got Bogey, you've got Cave and Matt, of course.
I don't think, you know, obviously the Gary Hutton we just mentioned, Rhys Yates as well, who has also had a cracking result on Corsica doing WRC2 this year. He's come back to get some more gravel time in his Skoda. I think it's going to be another one where he's going to come back and maybe not. I'm not going to tip him for a win, but I think his pace, I think the time he's getting in the car now doing WRC events, I think coming back and doing one of these events, Trev, now, and Jack's already made reference to the fact that the losing mileage, it's kind of like a sprint event for somebody who's been doing WRC events, isn't it? Coming back and doing like a 60-mile rally.
It is, but again, it's an opportunity for him to go make notes and go practice, tweak things, and just really, maybe if he leaves the car as it is and just focuses on his driving, it'll help him as a fast-paced test, effectively.
Very much so, very much so. I just think we need to mention, obviously, it was the Easter Stages last weekend, Trev, something which you know probably a little bit about. It was fantastic to see Craig Breen rack up yet another win, and he definitely seems to be a man in form.
Yeah, and he can control the pace, you know, it's the nature of the man. He's always been like that. Once he gets to a level, he can stick at it and just hold everybody off. But the fight for second place is brilliant, you know. The same guys who were going quite fast last year in the Ulster Rally, you got Johnny Greer and you had Callum Devine actually was up there as well, and Desi Henry, the three of them having a proper ding-dong for second place. And again, some stages not far off. Like I think Johnny Greer was only 12 seconds behind Breen at the end of the first day. Interesting to see how those guys have picked up their pace a little bit. Surprise in that rally was Alistair Fisher, who was really quick in the first two and just dropped off a little bit. I think maybe he thought he was going fast, but the times just weren't there. So that champion's going to be fantastic. And then James Wilson's going to make his debut in the next round in an R5 car in Philip Case, as you just mentioned before, an R5 car in Killarney. And of course, we all know that Michael Fassbender's heading to that rally as well with Barry Goodman. I think his co-driving it was just announced today.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, we keep on coming back to this, and I mentioned a bit later on the podcast, and Ryan and I spoke about it last week. I'm still staggered, boys, and I'm going to leave all that. I'm still staggered by people finding budgets to run R5 cars. I really am.
Somebody was just tweeting earlier about, sorry, gentlemen, somebody's tweeting earlier about back to the days of full entries in Ireland where you have to run reserve lists now. Amazing,
wow.
Isn't it?
Wow. And, you know, you look at the entries, Jack, and the amount of R5 cars that are cropping up over there as well. It's just phenomenal, isn't it?
It makes me angry. Do you know why?
Why?
It makes me furious because, as a journalist, you're supposed to be able to analyse everything that's going on and come to some sort of logical conclusion as to why things are happening. And for Ireland, I have nothing. I literally have not a single speck of intelligence I can offer that tells you why there are 15 to 25 R5 cars at, you know, $350,000 a season each. All running an island. It's absolutely incredible. There's no explanation for
good
it.
Good job. You wanted to buy it a few years back.
I was just about to say to Trevor Agnew, do you remember the WRC cranes and heavy plants that there was?
I still think there was more money knocking around on the Galway rally than any of the WRC days, I reckon. Would you disagree with that, you two?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, it certainly was
pro drive shop window M-Sport back in the day.
Pro drive, yeah. We're very happy with it. Yeah.
Well, I'd say more pro drive at the time. Pro drive shop window back in the day was Ireland.
Yeah, and Derek McGarity was always dipping and dealing. That was
yeah, absolutely. Let's get away with this. Get away from this before we end up in court. So anyway, yeah, right. Any other business, boys? Trevor, I can you go?
Interesting one for you. Rally Argentina 2005 was actually my last international rally, believe it or not.
It was
14 years ago.
Can I ask you about it?
Yeah, go on.
Why were you excluded?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you the story because we were actually leading at one point in the first leg, Mark Higgins and I, and we dropped back. I think we got a puncture in the first day, and we dropped back and got into the last group of stages. We got to the refuel and discovered that there was a mistake in the team and they put our teammate who had retired wheel, spur wheel in the boot of the car. So we alerted Mike Harris, the scrutineer, said, listen, we've got this wheel in the car. We're not going to use it. We're going to come back into after the stages. It was the last stage in Minaclavera and El Condor. We'll come back in. We won't use the wheel. If we do, then we're out of the rally. We understand that. But you come and examine the wheel. It's a genuine mistake, not our doing. We're not doing it intentionally. We're alerting you of it. Of course, we did all of that. We ended up in front of the stewards and it kicked us out. So I said, sod you and your rally. I'm not coming back. And that was it.
I remember this story because I remember the team.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
It was just a genuine mistake. It's like Formula One people make mistakes at wheel change and think that there's wheels on the ground. They put one of Tirabassi's wheels in our car. But, you know, we did our best to try and alleviate the situation. There's no clear competitive advantage because of it. But there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and that same year, just on my car. That same year, Higgy and I did rally Greece. So Acropolis, and actually on that stage, on that rally, the very first stage was super special around the Olympic Stadium, 72,000 people, and what we didn't realise at the time we got there in the World Rally Car, we were in the Stobart Focus, and the crowd were going mental as we were going around. Turns out we were 0.1 seconds behind Sebastian Loeb, otherwise we wouldn't lead the rally overnight, but at the end of that, all three Subarus were underweight. All weighed on it, and they got a fine. And that was it. Because we did our little misdemeanor, and we got through out of the rally.
Jack?
I wasn't bitter at all. Like,
I just want to say, do you still think Shreb slightly irked?
14 years ago. EK52 LMP.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one. And it was a mechanical retirement.
I had a picture of it somewhere. I'm sure Colin drove that car as well.
Yeah, it wasn't it that Pirelli thing that Ryan had some pictures out the other day.
I don't know.
I think it was. Anyway, we're now woman and Aaron, which isn't great audio, it has to be said. So can I have your any other business, please?
You can. It's a bit of a, it's probably going to be a bit of a meander, but I'll start with I wanted to put a question to the Absolute Rally listeners and to you guys. And the fact that the Mull and Jim Clark has come back has inspired me to ask, if you could bring back any rally from the dead, which rally would it be and why? So I hope everyone gets involved with this on social media and drops us a tweet, and I'm sure we'll put something out from the Absolute Rally account later on, and maybe we can talk about some of them next week if there's additional info that we can provide from our Absolute Rally.
I'll start
knowledge.
You, dead easy one for me. 5-day Circuit of Ireland, incredible.
Five-day Circuit of Ireland.
Yeah. Good chat.
I'm going to go... And this will be slightly controversial because it actually could happen again. I want to see New Zealand back.
Yeah, that'd be nice. New Zealand's a great show.
And of course, we do talk about this, by the way, a little bit later in the podcast with our man Peter Whitten from Rally Sport Magazine. And but yeah, I'd love to see New Zealand back. Because it was an awesome rally on Colin McRae rally back in the day. So
definitely. No, I'm gonna reveal mine next week. But I also wanted to add, from my point of view, followed this story from 2015 onwards, pretty much, with the closed road situation, Jim Clark and things like that. A massive thank you to everyone involved from the people who pushed this idea from the start. I think most recently sort of spearheaded by Ben Taylor when he came aboard, but there's been lots of people over the past 30 odd years who've desperately tried to make similar things happen, and they should all be credited as well. But all the people who filled in the form that the government put out to ask for feedback and things like that, all of those people have all played a massive part in getting this back. And I really do hope this is a bit of a new dawn for National Rally. And it was the final piece of the jigsaw. England and Wales obviously able to run closed road events. Interestingly, Clacton is running this weekend, which was the first event to use closed roads under the new legislation in 2018, at the start of last year. So great to see that event happen. And it's been well supported again this year. And yeah, I think there's closed road events cropping up all over the place. Two in Scotland. We're going to have two in Wales, or we're going to have bits and bobs of
there's one happening
road
in Wales very shortly, isn't there?
One in Aberystwyth.
Yeah.
So there's going to be bits and bobs in Wales, plus the closed road event in Aberystwyth, and also obviously Clacton in England as well. And I'm sure there'll be other events cropping up in the future. So well done to everyone who made that happen. And I really hope this is the start of something fresh and something new for British rallying.
Take a breath, Jack. Well done. Take a Thank breath. You. Yeah, there you go. Many of the business boys is Jack in MN this week. I kind of knew about this because obviously what I do, but I just want to tip my hat to the guys in all the WRC teams, and not just the top line boys, just as much the WRC2 runners and the privateers and stuff that are also going to be doing Chile. And the reason why is because I believe from a logistical point of view, this is going to be the toughest week for anybody in WRC. Now, Trevor, I don't know whether you've seen this. Jack, you may not have seen it, or you may have seen it. I'm not entirely sure. But there's a timetable that is in MN this week, which I can relate to 100%. And Sunday the 28th, which is obviously Sunday which Rally Argentina finishes, post-event scrutineering Argentina. Monday the 29th, re-prep work done on cars. Thursday the 2nd of May, depart Carlos Paz. Friday the 3rd, arrive in Chile. Saturday, 4th of May, service park preparation. Sunday, May 5th, preparation of recce cars. Monday, May 6th, documentation for recce. Tuesday, May 7th, recce day one. Wednesday, May 8th, recce day two. Thursday, May 9th, pre-event scrutineering for Chile. That's full on. In any sense of the word. Obviously, they normally have a couple of weeks in between events and stuff like that. That is going to be absolutely full on for the guys. Obviously, they've got a couple of days downtime while physically everything moves across. But I just take my hat off to the big teams and the small teams who are doing these events, you know, back to back. That's the whole idea of doing this thing back to back. And epic, epic job all round. And good luck to everybody, not just on the event competitively, but pulling this off and getting themselves to Chile as well. So there you go. That was my name of the business for this week. Boys, thank you for your time.
Can I ask a quick question?
Have you got your hand up?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Sting and the cars and the Sting.
Oh, don't ruin it.
Sting. I'm not going to say it. I just sent you my answers and you didn't reply. So I don't know why I've got them right or wrong.
Okay. Now
you have to reply to me.
I'll reply to you. Now, there's a couple of things, right? I need to check up on that. I haven't... Did you text them to me, Trev?
I did, yeah.
Okay, all right. I'll look at it and let you know. There's a couple of things. Folks, if you could email studio at absoluterally.co.uk, don't do what some people did last week and tweet it, because I had to get them to delete the tweets because they were actually right. And which kind of ruins the whole competition aspect of this if you give the answers away.
Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
We've only got 1,000 mugs.
Yeah. Please, no other form of contact, because it helps me kind of keep it all kind of in one place, and it helps me get all the orders out and everything else. So studio at absoluterally.co.uk. Can you guess all three vehicles, and can you guess the link to them as well? And we're going to be doing some stuff, as I say, with Kielder. Obviously, without them, we wouldn't be here, and the new mugs are going to be getting designed and stuff like that. And fingers crossed, you will be there'll be a hat trick of mugs to be had, of course, because we've done two previous mugs as well. Maybe they'll do a mug for each of us. Maybe.
Jack, send your answer in. Remember, you need to get this.
Jack's gone quiet. So there you go. Right, boys, thank you. We'll all be back next week to talk about our predictions and how badly they were wrong. So you've got the rest of the week off, Jack. You've got the rest of the week off, Trevor Agnew. And I'm going to be back after this break with Peter Whitten, Rally Sport Magazine.
This is Absolute Rally with Kielder. Whether it's the car, the service, the tools, the mechanics matter.
There's 15 more seconds to fill.
That's it, Tony. Car sounds?
Sounds good.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. Thanks to Trev and Jack at the top of the programme, obviously talking absolute nonsense about Rally Argentina. But we thought we'd bring a bit of serenity to the middle section of the podcast, and we'll get a little bit of sense, I would like to think. It's a man who's been on our podcast many times before. He's the man behind Rally Sport Magazine, which, of course, now isn't just available in Australia, it's available all over the world because you can download it. And of course, our friend of the show, Martin Holmes, also contributes to it, and many other people as well. But welcome back to Absolute Rally, Peter Whitten. Hello.
G'day, Tony. How are you going?
We're good. We're good. It's episode 2 of season 16, so we must be doing something right. That's all I'll say. We must be doing something right.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, it's great to see that, to have the series back again.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Listen, I wanted to get you on, Pete, because obviously, your magazine covers everything with regards to WRC, but you've also got your finger on the pulse of most things over your side of the world as well. And Asia Pacific got underway, of course, the other week. You were on Otago and stuff like that. So I kind of wanted to dip into that. I wanted to dip into the Australian Rally Championship and what's going on there. But if we can start with Otago, obviously we had a little bit of a report from there last week. That was obviously featuring more the classic event, but we had a dominant Hayden Padden, who is, all being well, he's going to be with us a bit later on this season in the podcast, on the main event. And I can't help but feel, I posed a question last week, Peter, on the podcast, is that, you know, do we really need to see Hayden somewhere else to win a rally? Was it 6 or 7 minutes? You know, it's just nuts, isn't it?
It's just nonsense, really. I mean, he was so far dominant in the Otago rally that it wasn't funny. And I think the Asia Pacific Championship event there, obviously they've come up with a different format for the APRC this year, where they have, there's two qualifying events in New Zealand, there's two in Australia, a couple in Japan and one in Indonesia, and then there's a final in China. So the winner from the New Zealand events gets the opportunity to go to China to the grand final. So obviously Hayden is looking at that, but only four entries, I think, for the first round, which is disappointing, but I guess they need to start somewhere. But Hayden won that event by over 15 minutes in his I20 AP4 car, so just a total dominant performance.
Yeah, it's, you know, we know Hayden's trying to do other things this year. He's took delivery of a TCR car. Obviously, he's doing some rally crossover here in Europe as well. And, you know, we forget it was only a couple of years ago he was winning, you know, this coming weekend is Rally Argentina. It was only a couple of years ago, of course, he was winning it.
Yeah, I think I saw a tweet today. 3 years ago today, he won Rally Argentina. So everybody knows, I'm sure, that Hayden's got the ability, and he really is, I guess, missed from the WRC this year. And I guess on the performances of some of the teams this year or the drivers this year, he would certainly be doing just as good a job. But I probably want to say at the minute, if the listeners out there, if they want to see what Hayden's doing, jump onto his YouTube channel. There's some in-car footage there from the last stage in Otago. And if you want to see commitment on some fast, fast six-gear stages, have a look at that, because it's quite phenomenal.
I've actually seen a snippet of some stuff, and it's just nuts. And as you say, you know, I suppose you guys probably, I think probably the divide comes down because obviously Australia, New Zealand, we know there's a little bit of competition there, but I think we all kind of get the fact that you guys probably support Hayden as well. It's a bit like, I suppose, us and Craig Breen. I think they're very similar scenarios. I think that, you know, I think the there's a lot of us over here that want to see Craig back in. There's a lot of, obviously, you guys over there want to see Hayden back in. But it's hard to see where the opportunities are going to come for them at the moment, I think.
It certainly is. And it was interesting. I mean, I guess everybody is pretty clear on the fact that if Hayden has a trouble-free run, he's going to win the Asia Pacific Championship by a week. But he went into the Otago Rally, which is an event that I think he won six times previously, and one of those times was in a Mark II Escort against all the four-wheel drive cars. So he's really dominated over the years, and he went in with the mindset that he wasn't there just to win the rally, but he was there to beat his own stage times. And I think on nine of the stages that were repeated from previous years, he just blitzed the stage records on all of them. So he's certainly making sure that he's on his game, and that's part of getting the TCR car so that he can do some tarmac practice and keep his eye in for a tarmac rally drive. And I think he's still got that inkling that he wants to get back in the WRC, obviously, and whether that happens remains to be seen, but he's certainly doing everything he can to make sure that he's match fit.
Do you think there's, and maybe this is an unfair question, but obviously he's very much aligned with high-end art. He has been, obviously, for the last probably 4 or 5 years as well. And, you know, what he's doing over there, obviously taking the AP4 Plus car, which is a high-end die. Obviously, he's took delivery of a TCR car from high-end die. Do you think that could possibly restrict his opportunities elsewhere?
I guess you could say that. I mean, I think one of the things Hayden has been doing over here is in one way setting himself up for the future. And it's a bit like Possum Bourne did many years ago when he had the allegiance with Subaru. There were probably times when Possum had offers from Mitsubishi or Toyota or other teams to swap, but he stuck with Subaru. And that built his whole career around being loyal to the brand and being an ambassador for the brand. So I think that all helps. But I'm sure Hayden has had offers from other teams or he's spoken to other teams over the last 12 months. But at this stage, he sees his future is with Hyundai, and let's hope that it pans out for him.
Very much so, very much so. Just going into, obviously, the APRC, I didn't realise that they'd gone to this kind of qualifying section. So how it works is that basically, is it funded in some way then to get to the final? So basically, you know, the logistics of getting to the events, is that funded or have you still got to get yourself there?
Well, Rally New Zealand or Motorsport New Zealand have come out and said that they will help fund the winning driver in New Zealand to get to China. The two events in Australia are the Eureka Rally in Victoria and the Rally of Tasmania. But at this stage, the winner of that will have to fund that themselves. So while there's only two qualifying events for each country, you then do need to get your car and everything else over to China for the final. So it's a different system, obviously, and a different setup this year. Whether it works remains to be seen. But the APRC had its glory years back in the 1990s, I guess, when there were Subaru, Mitsubishi, Toyota. They're all competing with three-car teams, with drivers like Burns, McRae, and Possum Bourne all running in those series. And the past few years, while they've had some good drivers, and Skoda has been the team that's run those good drivers, the Pontus Tiedemanns and the Ole Christian Vabies and those sort of guys have come down and won the Asia-Pacific Series. The entry numbers have been really low, and I think most events, if they got 10 to 15 entries, they'd be doing really well. So as I said before, there's only been four entries at Otago, but they came into the championship quite late this year as far as the time they had to prepare. The APRC, they had to do something to try and turn things around. It may not work this year, but it might build for next year. So we're certainly hopeful down this part of the world that that things will turn around.
Do you think the structure changed like that? And I'm just thinking back to you know, more recent years, I guess. You've just mentioned Skoda, of course. You know, I was quite close to the guys at Proton and stuff like that. And, you know, Proton, of course, have just homologated their new car as well. But do you think this kind of structure is more geared towards a privateer as opposed to the works teams?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess the thing that really put the nail in the APRC's coffin many years ago was when the Japanese manufacturers pulled out of rallying. As I said, we had Subaru, we had Toyota, we had Mitsubishi. They're all putting in multi-car teams in the APRC. And that obviously generated a lot of interest. If Subaru were there, Mitsubishi had thought they had to be there as well. But we also had tobacco sponsorship back then, so some of the big tobacco companies were sponsoring those teams as well. So a lot of that money has obviously dried up in the advertising sponsorship arena, and those manufacturers have pulled back. Now, obviously, there's been talk over the recent months that Subaru may come back or Mitsubishi may come back. We know Toyota's already come back. So if that happens, I think the success of the APRC moving forward will certainly be have a lot to do with whether those manufacturers want to get involved again.
I think the announcement, which wasn't really, it wasn't a massive announcement, but it kind of came under the radar, was the confirmation, of course, Toyota developing an R5 car. It's going to be based on the new Yaris model. And you just think back to the years of the importers that used to take Toyota, you know, it massive over in Belgium, of course, you know. You're on Neil Bates over there, obviously, was a massive importer and supported by TTE, I think, back in the day. And obviously, they're doing their thing with the AP4 car. I just wonder whether this R5 category, which Ryan and I have been really, really critical of, ironically, over the last probably last couple of seasons, and not critical perhaps of the cars, but they're not cheap cars to run. You know, this is the other thing. You know, they are quite expensive cars to run, but they seem to be the go-to car for everybody at the moment. But if go on, sorry.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think for championships like the APRC, back in the day, I mean, the manufacturers, they were running their World Rally Championship cars, initially the Group A cars with the Subarus and the Mitsubishis and things, but then the World Rally cars came into the APRC as well. So really, back in those days, unless you had the top factory car, you weren't going to be competitive. So at the moment, I'm pretty sure that those cars aren't allowed to be run in the APRC. So you really need an AP4 car or obviously an R5 car to be competitive. And I think that's a good thing because we've seen obviously in Europe there's very few of the 2017 spec WRC cars that are actually running anywhere else other than in the WRC simply because they're too expensive.
Yeah, I just hope, though, that, you know, just going back to obviously the brands you've just mentioned, the Japanese teams, the fact that Toyota are going to go with an R5 car, and you just hope that maybe importers look at it, and then maybe that knock-on effect of maybe Subaru or maybe Mitsubishi. But, you know, I know there's a lot gone on with Mitsubishi. There's a lot changed at Mitsubishi from the days of Rally Art. Obviously, that's all gone now. And I'm not too hopeful about Mitsubishi, I'll be honest with you, Pete. I don't see Mitsubishi back anytime soon.
Yeah, I guess the one we are forgetting, Tony, that was Hyundai. And with Hyundai being Korean-based, obviously in Asia, and if Hayden's doing a couple of events this year, goes to the final in China, does he have plans to try and get Hyundai involved in the APRC further for next year? I don't know yet. But that's another consideration as well. We do have an Asian manufacturer in the, or I guess two now, with obviously Toyota and Hyundai. So things are building. Obviously, the championship at a WRC level is still trying to get more manufacturers in. We wait and see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it'd be great to see Proton back there as well. You know, that's well, absolutely.
Yeah, with their new R5 car. So it will be wonderful to see the R5 car come back and do some events down here.
Yeah, fingers crossed for the guys at MEN and, of course, Proton in Malaysia. The Australian Rally Championship, Peter, it's, you know, we just mentioned, of course, about AP4, AP4 Plus. The AP4 cars seem to, well, specifically the Toyotas now seem to be got themselves together. They had a bit of a troubled year last year, I think, but now they seem to be strong, the Bates brothers.
Yeah, they do, and obviously we had our first round on the first weekend in April this year, and for the first time Toyota ran two of the AP4 Yaris's with the brothers, Harry and Lewis Bates, Lewis being the younger brother, and they finished first and second. They did have some mechanical issues last year, as you mentioned, but they've certainly started the season well. And young Lewis, who last year drove an S2000 Corolla, which was the car that his father Neil won, I think, the 2007 Australian Championship in, so it's quite an old car now, but he's moved up to the AP4 car this year. And already in his first event, he was setting faster stage time. So he's going to be a very quick young driver and could be a pretty dominant season from the Toyota boys.
And now, again, there's been last year, obviously, there was this Rook. Rook's probably the wrong adjective, really. But there was a lot of R5 Skodas that were available, of course, with the demise of the Asia-Pacific team, you know, the MRF Asia-Pacific team. And obviously, the R5 cars run by Race Talk over there. And a lot of them got hired into the Australian Rally Championship, didn't they?
They did. Now, Eli Evans, who won our championship last year, he drove the Skoda R5 for much of the season. That car has now, I think, been sold to New Zealand, as have, I think Race Talk had three Skoda R5s, and I think two of them have gone to New Zealand. And one of them was bought by a local Western Australian guy by the name of John O'Dowd. Back in the day, you'd call him a gentleman driver. He's not going to win the championship, but he's a consistent guy, and he's gone and bought the R5. Moved up from a WRX Subaru, and he finished equal fifth over the weekend for the Forest Rally in Western Australia. So he's certainly getting used to the car quickly.
That leaves our friend of the show, who's not been on for a little while, but can we lay any claims to Molly Taylor? She did live here for a bit. She did do quite a lot of rallying here, but she's still in that big old Subaru. Obviously, they've opened up, you know, they've opened that car up now from Group N regulations. Obviously, new team running it as well. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think the car was quicker. It's been made a bit lighter as well. It's a Subaru, I guess, so it's quite a big car. It's going to be heavier than everything else. Molly's a very good driver, as we know, and she had some dramas in Western Australia, finished equal fifth over the weekend. But I think they know at the start of the year that to do well, to finish on the podium in the championship this year, they need to be consistent throughout the year. And of the six events, they need to make sure that they're in the top three or top four in each of those events to have any chance. But as I say, we certainly know Molly's ability, but a bit like Hayden, a bit like the Bates boys, she's pretty much committed to the brand and to Subaru. And the championship over here is thankful it's the Subaru Australia team have once again backed their driver for this year. So, it's looking good for them.
As I say, fingers crossed, you know, she can get some results, because it does look, you know, these Subarus now do look big buses, don't they, compared to these little kind of squat, you know, AP4 cars, R5 cars, wherever. It does look like a big bus now, the Subaru, where, you know, in years gone by, the Subaru was always the shorter squatter car compared to most of its rivals.
Yeah, I think if the stages are fast and flowing, the Subaru is a good chance because you can maintain that corner speed and the top end speed. But as soon as the stages get tight and twisty, the more nimble AP4 or R5 cars certainly come to the fore.
Just if we can just dip into, obviously they've got another year of the single make tyre and the Australian Rally Championship with MRF, and MRF obviously supporting the championship. Do you see the strength of obviously gaining finance from a tyre manufacturer supporting the championship? Because obviously we have big issues over here at the moment with regards to, you know, our British championship doesn't have the depth it once has. It has some really good quality right at the top, but it doesn't have the depth. Can you relate to that a little bit, I suppose, with the Australian Rally Championship and perhaps why the Australian Rally Championship went with a single make tyre?
Yes, I think we certainly can. And it's really a double-edged sword, I think, because on the one hand, everybody's in the same boat with a one make tyre, but then you have your privateer competitors who might have local support from a Dunlop or a Pirelli or a Bridgestone or whoever it might be. Therefore, it makes it more expensive for them. So instead of getting free tyres for each event, they've still got to go and buy the tyres from MRF. So it does make it an even championship that way, but it does make it more difficult, obviously, as I say, for the privateers who might have had support once before. But I think back in Australia here, back in the day when Subaru was running and Toyota were running their World Rally cars with Possum Born, those guys were generally able to get what were, I guess, loosely termed at the time of WRC spec tyres, so that a privateer who was running a Pirelli might not have been on the same tyre as a Possum Born was on in a Pirelli as well. So it does even things up, but it does make it a bit more difficult for the guys that are paying their own way.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, New Zealand Rally Championship, Peter, that's a championship which, to be fair, you know, as we mentioned Hayden, of course, right at the beginning of all this, I'm assuming Hayden's going to do his national championship as well.
No, he hasn't registered for the championship this year. So he's only doing the first two events, which was Otago and the Rally of Whangarei, which is in a couple of weeks. So he's not registered at all. So the guy who's leading after the first round is Ben Hunt, who's driving, incidentally, a Subaru WRX. He won by about a minute over the first round from Dylan Turner, who's running an Audi Quattro AP4 car. So that's another AP4 brand which is up there. And third in their championship currently is Phil Campbell, driving a Fiesta AP4. So some nice variations. And I think I'm just looking at here, there's about nine different manufacturers in the top nine in the New Zealand Championship. So it's certainly a broader range of cars in New Zealand than what we're running in Australia. And I guess that's the depth of the championship over there as well at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. With regards to the magazine, Pete, is there any stories you want to share with us before we let you go? Because obviously I know you're a busy man. Is there any stories our listeners need to be looking out for on the Rally Sport website?
Well, I guess the big story that we've been sort of chasing over the last week or so is the news that Rally New Zealand might be back next year in 2020. That was a story that was also picked up by David Evans from Autosport last night, I think, our time. So while there's been nothing official released by either of the events or by the FIA or the WRC, the word is that the WRC aren't happy with the location of Coffs Harbour here in Australia, as far as the population base and whatever there, and that New Zealand might get around to the WRC next year in 2020, based out of Auckland. And then Australia will then maybe come back in 2021 if they can find another location. As I say, we've spoken to both Rally New Zealand and Rally Australia. Neither event is keen to come forward with any real information at this stage. So I guess until we hear something official from the FIA or the WRC, we just have to wait and see.
I'm always a little bit concerned when it's only 1 year as well. That doesn't really work for me when it's 1 year, because I think that's one, it's too much pressure. And again, I'm going to concentrate myself here. I don't think the rotation worked either back in the day.
No, the rotation definitely didn't work. It was a good idea. And for a couple of years there, Rally Australia and Rally New Zealand had the same sponsor, which was Repco, who are an Australian New Zealand parts accessory shop. That worked okay, but when they had different sponsors, it was very difficult to retain staff over a two-year period if you didn't have a rally the next year. So that's why that failed. If New Zealand get it back for next year, fantastic for them. But how that works moving forward, you're right, I'm not sure how that works at all. New Zealand's a lot smaller country than Australia. Australia is probably 25 million people. New Zealand's about 4 or 5. So it makes it very difficult from their side of things to get a sponsor that can put in enough money. Rally Australia has had the New South Wales government backing the event for the last few years, which has been wonderful. If New Zealand can't get the support of the government to do that over a multiple year thing, yeah, that makes it very hard for them. But I think all the drivers would be keen to go back to New Zealand. As we know, it's the best roads in the World Championship. But these days, money talks all languages, and that's where the bottom line is.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go next. It is a financial thing now. I think probably we're all guilty of the rosy-coloured spectacles, the halcyon days of rallying. And obviously, Ryan and I were talking about Safari last week, which Michelle Mouton had said, you know, she'd been over there to look at it, and she feels it needs to be a tougher event as well. But, you know, that was something else which Ryan mentioned. Of course, Ryan, of course, a winner of the historic Safari event only a couple of years ago now. But, you know, they'd have to build purpose-built cars for Safari. You know, you would expect that, you know, the same gravel cars, they're going to be able to roll out, so to speak, on Australia or New Zealand, and it's no special cars or nothing like that. But, you know, where I'm going with this is that you just mentioned about the populations, and I find that quite interesting. I've not even thought about the population thing, but how big is rallying, would you say, in Australia? You know, as a sport, how big is it?
Yeah, it's pretty small. It's not played with a ball, so therefore it ranks way down the list.
Yeah,
certainly the biggest motorsport in Australia would be the supercars. So obviously the V8s with Team Penske and Triple Eight running big teams over here. They have like a 14-15 round season. So that's the most popular motorsport. Probably after that, I guess, would be Formula One, even though we only hold the one round per year. Formula One's big worldwide, obviously. And rallying is quite a way down the list in our sports. And obviously it's not getting mainstream media coverage like you would like, and perhaps like it's getting in Finland and other countries in Europe. But New Zealand is a bit different. They have a smaller population base. Rallying is probably up there with the most popular motorsport in New Zealand. And with a smaller population, it does get a lot better coverage over there in New Zealand. So, we're both countries are fighting uphill, I guess. And as I said, with money ruling things these days, if you haven't got the money like the Turkeys or the Chilis to come into the championship with a big checkbook, it makes it very difficult.
Very much so. Well, watch the space, and also obviously watch the space on Rally Sport's website. What's the best way, Pete, of following what's going on Rally Sport these days?
Yeah, just rallysportmag.com is the best way. And one other story we have got is Martin Holmes has written a Welcome to Chile article, which basically goes into the history of rallying in Chile and how that's come about, and looking forward to the World Championship event in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, logistically, Rich, who was on with us last week, he's been sharing us some bits and pieces, and of course the schedule of when they finish Argentina to when they need to be packed up, to need to be on the road because it's all going to be trucked over to Chile. How that is going to work, I can't wait to see from a professional and personal point of view. I can't, because they're going to be doing reprepper recce cars during Argentina to get them loaded on the trucks and stuff like that. So Chile's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a lot more of a challenge perhaps than what people who only see the sport from perhaps the competitive side of stage times probably won't appreciate. But trust me when I say this, they're about to have probably the busiest week they've ever had in WRC.
I could well imagine. I should also mention happy birthday to Martin Holmes too. It's his birthday today, so wish him all the best.
Well, Martin will be back with us in a couple of weeks, so happy birthday, Martin, and we look forward to catching you in a couple of weeks. Listen, Peter, thank you for your time. I do appreciate it, obviously with time differences and everything else, and we will get you on again soon.
Good stuff. Thanks, Tony.
Fantastic, folks. We'll be back after this break with Craig Parry.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, middle of crest, 8-6 right, minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens 5-6 over left crest, over 17, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. If you've got the right answers and you've emailed them in, congratulations. We will start announcing some of the people that have won. I don't even know what the mug's going to look like yet. It's definitely not going to look like me. It will look like something that Dan the Weed Terrace put something together for. So we'll have that with you in due course. Anyway, you've probably heard the stings, obviously mentioning Craig Parry and everything else. And we've had Craig on before. We thought we'd get him on again. So welcome back to Absolute Rally, Craig Parry.
How are you?
We're all right. You're a busy boy. You're a busier boy than I've ever known you to be.
And me.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty going on.
There's loads going on, which is brilliant. And you know, you've thrown yourself into this stuff, which is great. Now, one thing we kind of missed out on our break was the fact that you did a training day, which I just think is great. They've been done before, but they never really seem to carry on, which is always a shame. And you know, you do get a mix of newbies and obviously experienced people. And you've had some great people down talking at them as well, haven't you?
Yeah, obviously the training days were in association with the Welsh Championship and us getting involved with the notes, and it was always from the start, we planned it to do three of them throughout the year, and we had the first one a few weeks ago at Sweet Lamb, which in all fairness, at the end of the day, I think we all just sat down and were really, really chuffed with the way the day had gone. Obviously the weather helped and we had a good turnout. I think there was 12 turned up in the end. We had some great people there doing some talks. We had Toby, who's the PR girl from Ravenel. She came and did a big thing on the media side of things, which was really good for him. Gus Greensmith came down, which was really thankful for Gus, making the trek all the way from Bury down to, Poland.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's moved.
He came over from Poland, to be fair to him, on his way to Dubai, I think, is where he was off to next. So, he did a really good talk. I mean, everybody, I think it was about 45 minutes long, and you could have heard a pin drop in there, to be fair. They were fully engaged with everything he was saying. You know, he's come from exactly the same background as some of the others, through the Formula 1000 and up through the R2 Fiestas and, you know, into the R5 car. Now, well, a factory driver as such, isn't he, with the R5 and WRC 2 Pro. So it was really good for them. And then we had Oshan Price there in the afternoon doing some driver training with the drivers that turned up as well, so which they found unbelievably beneficial as well, to get somebody like Oshan's experience in all them range of cars as well. We had everything from a Micra to a Mark 2 to an Evo 9. And obviously Oshan has driven everything from a Mark 2 to a front-wheel drive to a four-wheel drive, and he gave a really good insight and gives some really good, valuable experience to him, really.
Brilliant. And both of them are still really relevant as well, aren't they? You know, the both of them are still there. They're both still doing it, and they're in the moment. And, you know, we joke about this, but the closer to the age of some of these guys that I guess you've got there as well.
Yeah, and that was always a point that we tried to make, was to, you know, to get somebody there that was relevant, and I suppose a little bit of a draw for them as well, you know. And like I say, you know, they know who they are, they've probably seen them, they've probably even competed against them or you know, had some kind of contact with them. So even just to sort of see where they've come from and where they've been is where some of these guys are obviously trying to get to. So, yeah, no, the relevance of having current people there was at the forefront of it, really, for me.
Now, as you say, that was you were running three of these in conjunction with the Welsh Championship. When's the next one, mate?
19th of May. We're going to Cannes, or the Forest Experience, so otherwise known as Higgins Forest Experience. Yeah, that's the next one. We're just sort of finalising the lineup of who we got there, but we've got some really interesting guys again, a different mix of people. There'll be a different sort of activities going on as well. So we're just trying to mix it up all the way through. It's fairly easy for the drivers, I think, because if you get somebody in who's, you know, who they come to get tuition off, it's all very good and relevant. But the co-driver side is a little bit more tricky, I think, to keep them engaged and to give them something different. So it'll be a lot more practical stuff, whereas the first one was a lot more classroom, because me and Jamie did a short course in the afternoon with the co-drivers that were there. So we're just going to do something completely different on the second one, like I say, just to make it more practical and more interactive with them, so they're not just sat in a classroom.
I guess what you've just said there as well, which leads us quite nicely into saying, I seen something coming out over the weekend and I had no idea you were going to do this. And I was kind of surprised that probably somebody hadn't done it before, if truth be told. But you mentioned about co-drivers and keeping it, you know, kind of relevant and keeping it new, and you know, it's trying to condense everything down. You put something out with regards to an online course, which I guess people can keep referring back to. How's that come about, and how's that going to work?
Well, with the initial course we did, we had a really good turnout for the start of it. I think there was 15 places, and eventually on the day, after a couple had dropped out, we had 13, which was mind-blowing for me for the first time of doing anything like that. And then we went to do the second course because we had so much interest over the weekend. But then the numbers just wasn't there as such. So we thought, like, how can we get, you know, the course out to people who probably don't want to come and spend an afternoon sat in a classroom or don't want to travel. You know, it can be like, there was people all around the country from the north end of Scotland to like down south that were interested in the course, but it's finding a venue that suits everybody. And that was the difficult point, was trying to get somewhere where people would travel to. And, you know, it's obviously the pricing of it as well, because you've got to get a venue and, you know, the logistics of it all. So yeah, it was just a brainwave that me and Jamie came up with, really, or probably more Jamie than me. He was, he obviously, with his training background and stuff, and he does a lot of this online training with his own work and things. So he was like, well, you know, it's a sign of the times, the way everything's going. So why don't we look into doing the online course? So, you know, we've kind of sat down and we've thrown some ideas together. We've found a way to do it. And, we, you know, we're just finishing off the loose end of it, really, over the next few weeks. So it'll be launched at some point in May. There'll just be hour segments. You can do it from home, you can do it from a tablet, on a laptop, you know, wherever you are. It'll just be a specific time that the session goes live. And all you need really is a hands-free kit, like the one you get with your phone. Plug it in and you'll listen, you'll actually be able to talk to me and Jamie. We'll be there, you know, giving the presentation, as it were. All the documents will be in front of you on your screen or your laptop or whatever you're using. It's fully interactive. Any questions you have, you can talk. It's just like having a phone call, really. And you've got this document in front of you on your computer.
Wow. As you say, it seems obvious, but it's almost shocking that it hasn't been done before. How are you finding, you know, maybe the more experienced co-drivers? Are you finding those guys are reaching out to you as well?
Yes and no. You know, there's obviously people that have done a lot that have had quite a bit of interest in it, just to sort of see how it was working, really. But again, it's been sort of the logistics of getting to these days, and you know, the dates don't work with everybody, or the venue is too far away, and such and such. So, but no, in regards to your question, it's probably a lot more of like a national level type of co-driver that have come through, and certainly more the beginners. I've had a few one-to-one courses. I've got one guy on a one-to-one course at the moment who's doing some world championship stuff and some European stuff. So yeah, there's quite a big mixture, really. I wouldn't say it's a specific type of co-driver that's coming along. The first course we did, the first booking we had was a guy from Holland.
Wow.
So, you know, they're coming from all over the place, really.
Which is great. And then, you know, long may it continue. I suppose the future of keeping this out there and keeping it, as I say, keeping it live, is to have people maybe doing, you know, World Championship or ERC or whatever it may be. Is there any kind of scope to maybe try and tap into the Junior World Championship or the European Juniors, or maybe trying to do something with those guys?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a very young thing at the moment, but the idea is to make it grow, you know. So eventually it won't be for a point where it's just the UK base. That's the idea, and that's the nice thing with it being on online, is you can be anywhere in the world and do it, as long as obviously the timings and everything would work. So yeah, you know, there's plenty of scope for it to go. wherever it wants, and you know, for whoever needs it, really. And we can accommodate most things. So, you know, again, it's just a case of getting it off the ground and seeing how it's taken, really, and what sort of interest is there for it. And you know, obviously, the more the demand comes for it, then the busier we are.
Brilliant, brilliant. Again, you've got other stuff going on as well.
Yeah, you
obviously you're doing notes for the Welsh Championship, obviously, certainly events in the BTRDA National Series, of course, here in the UK, all the Welsh rounds anyway. How is that panning out for you and Killian? Because, of course, Killian was on the other week talking about other things, and he mentioned, obviously, how busy he's been with it. Obviously, you guys are working together on this. How has that been for you?
Yeah, brilliant. Really, really good. I mean, the uptake of it has been way better than either of us ever expected, you know. Every rally we get new names turning up on the order forms, so that's encouraging. And the old ones are turning up as well, so you know, we haven't really lost that many customers. I think there's a few that have tried them and they didn't work for them, which is fine. You know, we knew we weren't going to please, or they weren't going to please everybody, or they weren't going to suit everybody. But the ones that have stayed with us, you know, they seem to be enjoying them, and the response is good. And I remember when we first started, Killian was saying, like, you know, that it's a great thing when you're on the events and you're meeting the people and you see the characters and this. And it is. That's part of the enjoyment for me, is the signing on and seeing who comes and, you know, having a bit of chat and banter with people. And there's new events turning up as well. We've had another one which was accepted us the other day. So, you know, the calendar is growing as well. So, yeah, I'm really pleased with the way it's going. Delighted. It'd be exciting to see where we're at this time next year, really.
Brilliant. And I guess the other thing is, of course, you know, when we all go to rallies, we all go there with the agenda of we're doing a rally. You're going to rallies now, okay, you've got that pressure leading up to it, and of course you've got that excellent service where you effectively do a sweep of the stages on the Friday now, where you do give updates on the notes and stuff. But as you say, you can now kind of relax and kind of enjoy the event from a non-competitive point of view as well.
Yes and no.
Okay.
Because I am like a cat on a tin roof the days the rally's going, and I'm stuck to the times just seeing who's doing what and how everybody's getting on. So it's a different enjoyment, if you like. It's more from the outside looking in. But, I could see our a father rallying with his son would work, if that makes sense, with the way we look at all the customers and how everybody's getting on. And obviously when people start winning and stuff on the notes, it's a great feeling back home. So, and then it gives you the drive to get the next one in and to do the best job you can for everybody else that's using them. So yeah, there's definitely a different sense of satisfaction, but definitely one that I would still have had from competing myself, for sure.
Good man, good man. Now listen, the next course that you mentioned before on the 19th of May, what's the best way of people getting in contact, mate, if they want to get involved?
Well, we'll be putting something out shortly. Again, there have been some little updates on the Facebook and stuff like that, but just a direct message to me on Facebook is easy enough, or if you're on the events, you know, like with the planes and that coming up, I'd be on the rallies. So if you've got any interest, just make it known, really, either myself or Dave Everson, the other one as well, with the Welsh Championship. Just let it know. But there'll be enough stuff out there for people to be able to get in contact with us, so don't worry too much about that.
Brilliant. Craig, thanks so much for joining us, mate. Folks, you can seek Craig out, as Craig just said, and if this online co-driver course, you know, if you are in other parts of the world, and we do have listeners, of course, all over the world, do seek it out. Do look into it, because it will offer you something that you're probably not getting wherever you are in the world. So do seek it out. Craig, good luck with everything, mate. We'll catch up soon, okay?
Thank you very much.
Happy days. Folks, we will be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week. But if you could rate, review on iTunes, it really, really does help us out. And as I say, it does help us with our commercial partners. Folks, we'll be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally. Powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.